So, Mike, I've got some big news, actually.
All right. I like starting with big news. What's that?
So, I started a new job this week.
Wait, you... Okay. Back up here. Started a new job. Tell me more about this. Is this a trick?
No. Well, I guess there's actually two pieces of news. Why don't you tell everyone the first thing?
Okay. All right. I knew where you were going with this, but I want to play along. All right. So this is pretty big. Product Collective will now be the primary destination to take any of the fantastic courses that you've put together to teach product management, product leadership, AI product management, customer research. All of that will now be available directly through Product Collective.
That's right. We're getting even cozier now as Gigantic and Product Collective can be working closer together than ever. And if you haven't checked it out yet, you can just go to training.productcollective.com and get a taste for all of the incredible training courses that are available there today.
Yes. And we are very excited about that. But that other big piece of news that's coming.
Yeah. So I started a new role as the CEO of Lead Pages this week.
Which is amazing. I mean, Lead Pages been around for a long time already as it is. I've been a customer of Lead Pages in the past, probably will be many more times in the future as well. And that's amazing, Mike. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It was an incredibly exciting opportunity, one I just couldn't pass up. So Lead Pages, as many of you know, it's a lead generation platform. Makes it easy to build quick landing pages for generating leads. Now it does so much more, and we'll share all more about that soon. But today, let's get into our episode.
Yeah, we've got a great episode for you here today. We're going to be talking with Ryan Glasgow, the CEO of Sprig, about their journey to product market fit.
And we'll dive into some news from the tech world. But first, let's roll the intro.
Welcome to Rocketship.fm.
Rocketship FM is produced in partnership with Product Collective.
We're your hosts, Michael Saka.
And I'm Mike Belsito.
Before we get into it, let's take a brief moment to thank our sponsors. As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by Porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's Porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live small group cohort AI-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is and save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. Okay, before we get into the product market fit journey of Sprig, I wanted to talk a bit about some of the recent news in the AI space, specifically generative AI.
All right. I assume you're talking about the story in The Information this week about companies trying to temper expectations for generative AI products and their true capabilities.
Yeah, I'm sure many of you have actually experienced this. All the fancy Twitter or X demos that we see of these incredible AI image generators. And then you go to use some of the products and you're just kind of confused or disappointed in the results.
Yeah, that's right. So according to The Information, in the past year, major tech firms have championed generative artificial intelligence as the next big thing, boosting the stock market to new highs. We've talked about that. But behind the scenes, representatives of major cloud providers and other firms that sell the tech, they're tempering expectations with their salespeople, saying that the hype about the technology has gotten ahead of what it can actually do for customers at a reasonable price.
Several executives, product managers, and salespeople at major cloud providers such as Microsoft, Amazon Web Services, and Google, they all privately told The Information that some of their customers are being cautious or deliberate about increasing spending in new AI services, given the high price of running the software, its shortcomings in terms of accuracy, and the difficulty of determining how much value they're actually getting out of it.
So, maybe the humans are here to stay after all?
Yeah, I mean, at least for now, right? Most large companies are finding the cost-benefit analysis of these AI tools challenging because of the high cost of the software and the difficulty of measuring productivity gains. I don't think that's specific to AI. I think that's just in general. And so large firms, they're usually drawing from existing software budgets rather than devoting new money, which was really the promise that AI would open up all of this new budget because we wouldn't be hiring humans, we'd be hiring AI. But that's not actually the case.
Right. So it's pretty much right now, same budget, just shift around where the dollars go, right?
Yep. So that seems to be the trend, at least right now, until AI can reliably replace or expand the capabilities of a human employee.
Yeah, it's not to say it won't happen ever, but it might not be right now, might take a little while there.
Yeah, so interesting. You know, I think we talked about the hype cycle. We had Otto Pohl on the podcast a couple, I guess, months ago now. That's a really interesting episode to go back. But just talking about the AI hype cycle, I think we're starting to see some of that come true, which is fascinating because for a time, it felt like AI was just going to take over humanity. Now, I think reality is starting to set in. So anyway, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with the PMF story of Sprig. When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And, backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. So today we're going to be diving into the product research platform Sprigg. Sprigg is, well, actually, let's just hear it from Ryan Glasgow, the founder and CEO of Sprigg.
Sprigg is a product experience platform, and we work with many of the fastest growing and product teams, whether it's a product manager, researcher, designer, to really understand how their users perceive their products. And so we have two core products to collect data. One is in product surveys, another one is session replay. We also have the ability to combine those so you see the session replay before they leave and complete the survey. And then the third one, the third product for us is really around the analysis, and it's analyzing all the data that you're collecting with your end product surveys and with your session replays, and really surfacing and identifying trends and insights and themes about how you can improve your product experience.
To understand the origins of Sprigg, though, we first need to understand Ryan's background working in product.
My background's always been in product management, and four different experiences were pre-product market fit. And what I was often doing in those pre-product market experiences is that we were typically pre-launch very early on, you know, users often in the dozens or hundreds, you know, more than 1,000. And what I was doing is I was in the mixed panel dashboard, and I was watching all the actions that each user as an individual, you know, it's Michael or it's Sarah or it's Jonathan, literally looking at their journeys and then asking them specific questions over email based on user action or inaction. And by really getting into the user's minds at that stage is super, super critical, because you can look at the dashboard, and if you don't product market fit, 99% of people that never come back, you know, they're not going to care what you build. They're going to move on to something else. And, you know, you're just a brief experience in their life, and it's not really an impactful or purposeful product in their life. And so you can look at the data and you see this. Typically you start off with a really large drop off, but you have to understand that why is there that drop off? Why are those people not coming back?
And it's such a common issue we deal with when building a new product, and can be especially frustrating when every user matters so much in those early days.
So to solve this, we need to understand the problem that they were looking to solve by using your product. Here's Ryan again.
What was the problem? What was, you know, the problem they're looking to solve? What was really the challenge in their life that they considered using this product for? And when I went out Weebly, we were post-product market fit. I joined as the first product manager, and we had already hundreds of thousands of people using the product. And I was looking for a way to replicate that experience of really getting into users' minds and asking specific questions based on the analytical data that I was looking at in the Weebly analytics infrastructure. And I had the same questions, but I didn't have a way to reach the scale of audience that was using that product on a daily basis.
But knowing there's a problem just isn't enough. We need to know how big that problem is. Are customers willing to pay for it? Where does it sit in the context of their fixed software budgets? Teams, especially these days, simply can't keep adding software subscriptions without being accountable to the value that it's driving for their team and ultimately the organization.
There was certainly my individual experience, but I think that's where a lot of founders and entrepreneurs can get stuck, is they assume that because they have that problem, that everyone else in the world must have the same problem, and that it's a billion-dollar idea. And I was actually looking for a way to validate, knowing that this is the next 10 to 20 years of my life that I'd be really committing to, and came across a book called Outcome-Driven Innovation by Tony Olwick. And he breaks down several different examples of how you can really validate and really understand the unmet need in a market by measuring two specific attributes for a desired outcome. One is how important that outcome is. And the second one is how satisfied they are with the current solution they're using today. And so one example for Sprig is that for a product team to understand what a user really understand inside their minds about the decisions that they're making of why they're navigating the product, why they're using features, why they're not using features, I started to ask other product teams, how important are these outcomes to you? And everyone said, extremely important. And I started to ask, okay, let's segment the different type sizes of companies and let's segment based on the types of individuals or businesses that these companies serve. And so you end up with B2C, B2S, and B2B. You also look at small businesses, medium businesses, large businesses. So the firmographic data, and started to ask these two and really understand these two dimensions on the outcomes and found out that the underserved opportunity in the market where there's extremely important outcomes, but the outcomes are currently not, the customers are not satisfied by the current solutions on the market is with the high growth and at scale B2C and B2SMB companies. And so that was very much based on my experience at Weebly of working at a B2SMB company with 50 million accounts when I left and having a high degree of importance for understanding those qualitative data questions, but not having a scalable way to collect and understand and analyze that data at scale. And so that's where I started to really identify and see that unmet need in the market. And really wanted to focus there for the next 10 to 20 years of my life.
Yeah, pretty fascinating example of product validation. But we should take a quick break here. And when we come back, we will go back into the story of Sprig.
Before the break, we heard about Ryan Glaska, the founder and CEO of Sprig, and his journey to validate the problem space that Sprig seeks to solve. Now, Ryan finds himself post Weebly and begins contemplating how can he help teams get these same insights that he was seeking at scale? And what is a product that does that? What does it actually look like?
And so when I left Weebly, I thought about this, you know, really gap in the market for quickly growing and at scale product teams to ask the specific questions in their product experience. And so from day one, the founding thesis for Sprig was really around how can a product team scalably collect experience data, but also analyze experience data. And really thinking about AI since the company's very genesis and really the first, you know, the founding team included a head of AI and really thought about both of those pieces together. And so the premise is really based on those past experiences and that juxtaposition between pre-product market fit and post-product market fit at Weebly and realizing that teams don't have a platform or tool today to deeply understand those why questions that they have about their user base.
Now, I realize there's no shortage of product tools that are out there these days. There's, you know, Mixpanel, Amplitude, Pendo. How does Sprig see itself differentiating in this market, though, say, compared to, let's just pick Mixpanel?
Well,
they're one of our strongest partners. And the reason why is because the data sets are extremely complementary. And what we see, we have a native integration with Mixpanel as well at Amplitude, but you know, I'll mention Mixpanel because we're digging in there. And what we really see as for a modern product team is having an integrated stack for the analytics data, which is, you know, could be Mixpanel, which is considered the best in class for analytics data, the revenue data, you know, how much each user or customer is paying you. But then that third pillar is the experience data. And that's where Sprig really complements the revenue data and the analytics data. And so Mixpanel will tell you what your users are doing, you know, how many are signing up, how many are being retained, how many are trying a new feature. Where Sprig is really focused on telling you why they're signing up or why they signed up and didn't return or what they thought about that new feature. So we're more focused on the qualitative experience data layer, where they're more focused on the behavioral analytical data layer.
They would be the yin to Mixpanel's yang, if you will. Now, getting early customers is essential to any startup or product, no matter how good the idea is or how validated the problem space is.
And Sprigg was no exception. But because he was solving a problem that he and his team at Weebly had personally felt, he was able to bring it back to them in hopes that they would become an early partner.
And Weebly was acquired by Square. And so Square was actually our first design partner. Yeah, and so I reached back out to the team and said, hey, I want to work with you on something that was a challenge that I felt, and worked very closely with their user research and product management team and started to really show them potential solutions and ideas, but really wanted to understand those outcomes.
Square. I mean, what an incredible early partner. So what does it mean to collect and analyze experience data at scale for a team like Square?
And so what does it mean to scalably collect and analyze experience data at scale? One of the key pieces that came through was getting that data in context. So as a user's taking action or inaction, as they try a new feature, as they just complete the onboarding experience, and really being very targeted. And so we're the first to market for a targeted event-based in-product survey architecture. And we just were awarded the patent on that technology. And the second one was the text analysis of the open text data. And so we were talking to these teams, and they were spending often weeks to manually analyze and group that data together. And so we had our marching orders of a event-based and product survey data collection, which had never been done before, and something that we were first to market, and the ability to group text, open text responses into themes, even if there is no overlapping words or phrases between those responses. Also something that had never been done before. All the $20 billion companies in the category were using word clouds in 2019. And so we had two really tough challenges in front of us. But over the next 1 to 2 years, working with companies that fit that specific demographic and firmographic profile that we had in mind, and started to work with other companies like Square that also had that challenge, and started to really work with them to build their dream solution to achieve those outcomes that were really critical to them.
Product market fit, especially in B2B, can feel elusive at times. So I asked Ryan what they look for in their product that gave them signal where they found that fit and one that companies would use on an ongoing basis.
And what I saw in the early days at Sprigg is about 3 to 6 months in, you start to understand whether you're demonstrating significant value to that business. And you start to ask them, do you plan to renew? You know, are you considering expanding your contract with us? And in the early days of Sprigg, we saw incredible expansion between the month 3 and month 6. And so that was a very strong indicator that we were demonstrating incredible value to the business and that they were seeing a strong return on the investment to justify and warrant increasing that contract size. Certainly see people asking the product market fit question, but the difference with B2B is that the buyer and the user are often different people. And so the user could love the product and they could say, I would be extremely disappointed if I could never use this. But are you also communicating that value to the buyer? And so that's where we ultimately look at the renewal rates and the expansion rates, because that's the buyer's decision. But if the user is also disappointed, that's usually a good leading indicator that the buyer at that company will renew and expand. But it's not 100% correlation like B2C. Or if someone loves a product, you love Netflix, you are the buyer and the user.
So Sprigg has found what some would call product market fit. But what's next?
Well, one might say feature market fit.
Product no longer existed. But what we're seeing, which is really interesting from our customers that are post-product market fit, is they're measuring feature market fit with their current user base. And so you could be a billion-dollar company, and we have several, you know, billion-dollar companies, many billion-dollar companies using Sprigg. And they're shifting from, hey, we have product market fit, but we have hundreds of millions of users, but we also have this collection of features. Let's actually deeply understand and measure each feature to see which features have strong feature market fit. You know, would you be very disappointed if this feature no longer existed? And using Sprig to actually ask those questions after someone tries a feature after maybe 5 or 10 times. And then measure not the whole product, but really measure is the whole greater than the sum of the parts? And how do these features collectively all drive product market fit? And so it's been interesting to see that a lot of the B2C companies see product market fit as a measurable dimension, but also a dimension that can be broken down into sub-measurements as they are post-product market fit and start to add more capabilities to their product.
So what's next for Sprig now?
The two frontiers since, you know, starting the company has always been, how do we offer more ways to collect experience data? And then how do we offer more advanced or robust capabilities to analyze that data, and particularly at scale? And we've had some really exciting recent releases. We just last year launched Session Replay, like I mentioned, as one of our core products to collect data. And we are just launched an AI Insights feed. So imagine Facebook, you log in, you get a news feed, but this is a AI generated feed of different insights and recommendations and opportunities that the Sprig AI is finding across all the experience data. And so it can find emerging trends, it could find opportunities. We don't want to be all negative, so we also highlight strengths. Hey, here's what's going well. Not just what's not going well. We like to balance it out so it's not, you know, a feed of criticism. So we have trends, correlations, strengths, and opportunities that AI is sifting through all the data for you, surfacing those for you. And one that we're about to announce, which, you know, I can share with you, is we're the first to market on running Session Replay recordings through AI and actually grouping those recordings into themes and summarizing those themes. And so I saw a really great customer example last week where they'd collected over 6,000 Session Replay clips. And would you want to watch 6,000 Session Replay clips? Probably not. So we figured out how to apply AI to sift through all the 6,000 clips and say, here are 20 different themes we found on users getting stuck on a page, users taking a while to complete a form, users abandoning a form after starting the form, users interacting with a specific modal on the page. And we've just found that it takes the 6,000 clips and you can watch 20 to 30, maybe 2 or 3 per grouping, and really understand all 6,000 because it's been grouped, it's been categorized, it's been summarized. And maybe you only want to look at a specific grouping and focus there. That's really what you want to understand. People that got stuck on the forms, to see why they got stuck on the forms, and watch 20, 30, 40, 100 of those clips. So 6,000 becomes 20 to 100 max. And then combining that with the end product survey, you see them get stuck on the form. Even in product survey trigger, when you detect they get stuck on the form, you see them get stuck, you ask why they get stuck. That's where the magic happens, and that's where the AI is trying to really surface all that holistically.
Well, that wraps us up for today on this episode of Rocketship.fm. Make sure you leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. If you've been enjoying the show. For Mike Belsito, I'm Michael Sacca, and this is Rocketship.fm.